Want to mention a couple things real quick before we get started. The first one is a prayer of thanks, and the family of Carol Golightly, Carrie sent me this message this morning. They want to thank you for your prayers for Carol. She's still in the hospital. Of course, she's had quite a time with a couple surgeries, but she is doing better, and the doctor says it's believed that she could go home Wednesday. And so if you've ever been down, you know a couple things. One, how great it is to see improvement. It breathes life into you, the hope that you have. And you also know how much you appreciate prayers. And so I just want to communicate that to you. Great thanks from Carol and her family. And then I want to mention we have classes coming up in 2 weeks. We start a new quarter with our classes, so that information is in the bulletin. Be thinking about that. New classes Sunday, Wednesday, new teachers in our children's classes. Be noticing and make sure that we have all the teachers we need for our children's classes, see what we still lack. But I want to mention a new class that we'll have this quarter, and that is for engaged couples and newly married couples. And so if you've been married less than 5 years, we want to invite you to that class. That class will be across the street in the large classroom. Each week, a different couple will be in there. And so we'll have a man teaching that class each week with his wife, and they'll share from Scripture godly principles for marriage. And so we have a lot of wisdom in this church family. And we're going to share it next quarter with our engaged and newly married couples. And so be praying about that. Wanted you to know about that. Turn in your Bibles to Numbers chapter 33. Numbers chapter 33 and verse 55. I remember in junior high hearing, you know, in Bible class, one of the things that I remember when we would study it would be when we would study Solomon and all the wives that Solomon had. And I remember as a junior high boy, you know, that kind of, I mean, I might doze off once in a while, but when we talk about Solomon having 700 wives, I was paying attention. That was kind of fascinating to me. I didn't fully understand all that, but a man with 700 wives, you know, as a junior high teenage boy, that's quite a deal. I had a lot of thoughts about that. I didn't really understand a couple important things about that, and we're going to look at that in a moment. I didn't understand that God had told Solomon not to marry foreign women. I didn't understand that Solomon did that anyway, many of them. And I didn't understand that God told Solomon they would lead his heart after other gods, false gods. And I didn't understand that they in fact did lead his heart away from God. I want to talk about that in a minute. Numbers 33:55. The Israelites, remember, God led them out of Egypt, and He was leading them to a promised land, and He told them about this land that He would give them. He said, "This land is flowing with milk and honey. I'm going to give you a wonderful land to live in." They've been slaves in Egypt. They've never been independent. They've never had their own homes or their own nation or their own freedoms. And God said, "I'll give it to you. I've got the land." They go there. The deal is, though, there are people living on the land. There are people that have been living on the land. So there's a part of this story in God's people getting to the promised land, and that is, okay, you've got to drive these people out. Remember, God sent 12 spies in, and 10 of them came back and said, "We can't drive them out." And God was furious because they doubted His power. So God was going to drive them out with His power. He just needed the Israelites' cooperation. I mean, there were times when God would cause the enemy to be confused and just kill each other. So it wasn't like it was going to be, you know, incredibly difficult or insurmountable. God would do the heavy lifting, but they were to drive them out. Well, Numbers 33:55, God says, "If you do not drive out the inhabitants of the land from before you, then those of them whom you let remain shall be as barbs in your eyes and thorns in your sides, and they shall trouble you in the land you dwell." God warned them. He said, number one, you drive them out. Number two, if you don't, which is God's way of acknowledging, I'm going to tell you what to do, but in the end, you're going to choose whether you obey me or not. That's true now, isn't it? God's still telling us. I mean, we can read it and read it and read it and maybe do it. And God says, if you don't, here's what will happen. To fast forward, in case you don't know, they didn't do it. They didn't do it. They believed in God, but they didn't believe God. There's a difference. Think about that. They believed in God, didn't they? They had faith in God. They believed He was the Almighty, their Creator, their Redeemer. They believed in Him. They didn't stop believing in the Almighty. But they didn't believe what He said. God said, you do this or it's going to be bad. And they said, I don't think so. Do we believe in God? I hope so. I think so. I trust that we do. I mean, I sound like I'm confused, but I'm confident we believe in God. Do we believe God? And the answer to that question is in our life. How am I living? Because God says, here's the way. And if we don't, that there are horrible consequences to sin. The Israelites didn't. Joshua 16:10. They did not drive out the Canaanites who lived in Gezer. So the Canaanites that lived in the midst of Ephraim to this day, which would be when this was written, which would be a few hundred years B.C., to this day, but have been made to do forced labor. They didn't drive them out. They did turn them into slaves. Maybe there was some motivation there for the Israelites that said, we're not going to drive them out, we're just going to use them. Judges 2:21, I will no longer... This is God speaking. So God came to a point where God said, God promised them He would do the heavy lifting. And here, verse 21, I will no longer drive out before them any of the nations that Joshua left when he died. So God said, I'm not doing the heavy lifting. If you don't want them driven out, I'm not going to do it against your will. Verse 22, in order to test Israel, whether they will take care to walk in the way of the Lord as their fathers did or not. Does God test us? Absolutely. Does He tempt us to do evil? No. Does He test us to see if we truly love Him? Absolutely. Will He allow us to be tested? Absolutely. Will He allow us to be tempted in order to test us to see, do we really believe God? Yes. 1 Kings 11:1. Let's talk about Solomon. Solomon. He loved women. Solomon. 1 Kings 11:1. Loved many foreign women, along with the daughters of the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, Hittite women, from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the people of Israel, you shall not enter into marriage with them, nor shall they with you, for surely they will turn away your heart after other gods. God said this is a horrible idea. Bad, wrong, don't do it. Solomon clung to these. He loved foreign women. He had seven. This is the part that, as a junior high boy, this is what I remember right here. 700 wives, 300 concubines. But they turned his heart. They turned his heart away. Isn't that sad? It saddens me to think of Solomon and all that God did for him and all that he could have been in his life. I mean, he was, but then he fell what he could have been, but his heart was drawn away, and it wasn't like God didn't warn him. God said it would happen. His heart was not wholly true to the Lord. His heart was not wholly true. Is our heart true to God? Do we love God? Yes. Do we have holy love? W-H-O-L-L. Complete. Or is it partial? Solomon loved God. Solomon was true to God, but he wasn't wholly true. This is where I worry about us. I know we're true to God. I know we have love for God. I know we pursue God. But are we also loving foreign women? Are we also compromising? To fast forward a little bit in today's lesson, has the American church taken what is right and true about godliness and Christianity and blended it with our American culture? So that, yeah, we're true to God, but like Solomon, we're not wholly true to God. Something to think about. Verse 5, Solomon went after Ashtoreth, the goddess of the Sidonians, Milcom, the abomination of the Ammonites. So Solomon did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and did not wholly follow the Lord as David his father had done. He built high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab. These are false gods. Molech, the abomination of the Ammonites on the mountain east of Jerusalem. So he did for all his foreign wives who made offerings and sacrifice to their gods. Solomon loved the foreign women. Now, a lot of that was political. He'd marry, a foreign king's daughter to ensure peace between the two nations. Solomon did it. He was a politician, okay? But he also loved the women. Loved them. Well, they have false gods they need to worship. They need a temple to worship at for their God. You think that bothered Solomon's conscience? I think it did at first. But he loved the women. So up come the temples, so they could worship their gods. 2 Kings 17. Flip to 2 Kings 17. Have you ever heard of the captivity? Northern captivity, southern captivity. You heard about God, the nation of Israel. Of course, it started out one nation, but then we had essentially a separation. Israel to the north, Judah to the south, a divided kingdom. If you've heard that, probably divided kingdom. God told his people, stay true to me or I will turn you over to your enemies. He told them that over and over and over. And they would a little bit and then they wouldn't. And they would and they wouldn't and then they wouldn't a lot more than they would. And finally God turned them over to their enemies and they were taken into captivity. They were taken over, conquered, and the best of the people taken into captivity. This is the northern captivity. This is how it went down. 2 Kings 17:1. In the 12th year of Ahaz, king of Judah, Hosea, son of Elah, began to reign in Samaria over Israel, and he reigned 9 years. So this is the Israel's to the north. That's the northern kingdom. And here's the king at the time. And verse 2 says, he, this would be Hosea, did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, comma, yet not as the kings of Israel who were before him. The king of Israel, capital city Samaria, he did wrong. He did evil. He wasn't true to God. But he wasn't as bad as the kings before him. They were worse. That's kind of interesting when I read that. He did evil, but he didn't do that bad. He didn't do as bad as those guys. But it's still bad. And when I read that, I think of me. I do. We just took communion. Anyone else in here think about their own sin? I sin. Well, but, I'm not doing like this over here. Don't we do that? The Bible shows that, but it doesn't justify it. Just because you know of someone who's worse or doing worse means nothing, does it? Between us and God. In verse 4, the king of Assyria, which is a neighboring nation to the north, king of Assyria, found treachery in Hosea. This is verse 4. So he comes and invades, verse 5. He invaded the land, came to Samaria, the capital city, besieged it for 3 years. We don't have time to go into that, but when a city was besieged, they cut off water, they cut off food. And the city had a supply, but eventually it gets very, very, very awful. Verse 7, this occurred. Why did Assyria come and do this? Here's why. Because the people of Israel had sinned against the Lord their God, who brought them up out of the land of Egypt from under the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, had feared other gods, walked in the customs of the nations whom the Lord drove out before the people of Israel, and in the customs of the kings of it, that the kings of Israel had practiced. Why did God hand them over to captivity? Because they weren't wholly true to God. And God said, if you do not remain wholly true to me, faithful, not perfect, but remain true to me, otherwise I'll hand you to your enemies. This happened years later. They went through many kings, some of them good, most bad. But it finally happened. They believed in God, but they didn't believe God. When I was young and about to head off to college, and I know Dad instructed me on some of this before even then, but you know, at age 16, I'm driving and loving it. I love to drive. Always have. Love freedom. Love to drive. I remember the first time I drove. I'm driving down the street. I come to a stop sign and I say to myself, self, you can go anywhere you want. You want to turn right? Turn right. Anyway, I like to drive. Dad, when I went off to college, Dad told me a couple things about the car. Son, check the oil. Check the oil. Secondly, of course, he said, you know, if your oil gets low, bad things happen. Okay. Secondly, check your tires. Periodically, walk around the car, look at your tires. And I remember him telling me this. And I remember him trying to impress upon me, you know, if you don't, here's what will happen. Well, lo and behold, I believed in my dad. I didn't believe my dad because there came a day in college when I had two low tires on the passenger side. I didn't know were low. They were so low, they had rubbed, and now I have leaks, and now they're flat, and now I get to buy two tires for no reason because I didn't believe my dad when he said, son, check your tires. A couple years later, I essentially ruined the car because I let the oil get so low. Hadn't checked it. I believed Dad. I believed in Dad. I didn't believe him enough to do what he said. And the Israelites did the same. Notice that they look at the end of this. Verse 8. Notice the Israelites, what they did wrong. They walked in the customs of the nations around them. The nations that God drove out, that some of them remained, they let remain. And the nations around them, they acted like the people they were around. Stop and think for a minute. How different are we than this world? A different way of asking that same question is, how well do we blend in? I worry about this. I worry that we watch the same shows our neighbors watch. I worry that we talk not all that different than our neighbors talk. I worry that our hopes and dreams are not all that different than our neighbors' hopes and dreams. I worry that we have a little God in our life and we have a whole lot of this world in our life. Let's read on. Verse 9. People of Israel did secretly against the Lord their God things that were not right. I'll just stop there on this. But you can read the rest. But isn't it amazing how we think we can do what we want and nobody knows? Jonah thought that. We think we can do what we want. I worry that as men, this is more typical of men, that we do things secretly that those around us do, that we look at things, our eyes go places, computer mouse clicks places, we know we shouldn't be. We do things secretly. We know we shouldn't do. But our God knows, doesn't He? Women, I remind you, ladies, I worry this is usually more of an issue with ladies. Are we dressing for ourselves or are we dressing for our God? Are we dressing for God in a way that is modest and honors God, or are we dressing for how we want to be and wear and look? When I see, when you see Amish people, you know they're either Amish or some right, some flavor or related group of that nature, because they dress differently, right? Maybe riding in a horse and carriage. Another example, a little closer to where we are, maybe. A religious group, Christian group, where the ladies wear long skirts, long hair. I see these groups and I think they've gone too far. I think they're too extreme. And then I stop and wonder, are we too far this other way? We are to be different than this world, aren't we? I wonder if we're different enough. Verse 15, they despised His statutes and His covenant that He made with their fathers and the warnings that He gave them. They went after false idols and became false. They followed the nations that were around them. That's what keeps jumping out at me. They followed the nations that were around them. Nations that were around them. Man, that hits me because I know this world around me. I grew up in it. I mean, this is all I've known. I love this place. I can blend in here. Do I love it too much? Two final verses. The Lord was very angry with Israel, removed them out of His sight. In verse 19, or verse 20, the Lord rejected all the descendants of Israel and afflicted them and gave them into the hands of plunderers. I think we all probably have, you can relate to this to some way, most all of us. You probably have some older person in your life who is, that you would say is very spiritual, very godly. Maybe a godly grandmother, maybe an elder in the church, grandfather, maybe a parent. Maybe you look up to an elder or minister here, youth and family minister, just some person in your life, past or present, that you consider very spiritual. And you may look at them and occasions and, and you're trying to decide how to live your life and what's right and wrong. And you there have been times when you say, boy, if I said what I just said in front of Grandma, she'd just about come up and slap me. Because Grandma, to her, that wasn't right. You don't do that. But to me, I mean, I don't draw the line right where Grandma draws it. You may not draw the line where you think your elders and preacher or godly grandmother draws it. True. Here's my fear. If we're over here and we look to some other human being who is Christian and we look to them and we say they're more spiritual and they don't watch an R-rated movie or they don't say this word or that word or they don't do this or that, right? That's how they live. Well, I respect them. I look up to them. I mean, I'm trying to do good. I'm not there. I mean, I'm here. Here's my fear. What if God expects us to be over here? What if you're looking to the wrong place and you're looking to another person walking this planet trying to follow this who is drawing conclusions on right and wrong? What if they're not far enough? And I also worry that each generation, these three places, each generation, have you noticed they shift this way? See, I grew up watching a preacher who was also my dad, who wouldn't do certain things, or right? You understand what I'm saying? Each generation, we just shift over here one more. I know this isn't a sermon where we're going to walk out feeling 10 foot tall. I get that. But man, I read this Old Testament and I can't help preach it to you. I can't help it. Open it up. I know it's confusing. Read it. You won't get it all. I don't either. Read it. It'll open your eyes. God is warning us, and He's really patient. He waits a long time. He's warning us. None of us will stand at judgment. None of us in this room. This is the last thing I'm going to say for you clock watchers. None of us will stand at judgment and be able to say, you know what, I really wish somebody had told me this. None of us will stand before God at judgment and say, boy, God, I wish you'd have warned me. There will be people in our world that do stand at judgment and say, boy, I wish I knew this. I wish somebody had told me. But it won't be any of us. Our job is, are we going to ignore it or are we going to change our lives? Do we really believe God? So we're going to have an invitation song. I sense that there's a lot of conviction in our hearts, and we need to pray to God, and we need to say, God, I'm sorry, I believe you, I love you, and then we need to actually do it. And that'll happen later today and tomorrow and Thursday and on and on. But if you're here this morning and you know there's something you need to change, have done, you want prayers today, or you want your sins washed away, if there's something you need, please come while we stand and sing.
Heavenly armor will enter the land, the battle belongs to the Lord. The weapons that fashioned against us will stand, the battle belongs to the Lord. And we sing glory, honor, power and strength to the Lord. We sing glory, honor, power and strength to the Lord. When your enemy presses in harm, do not fear.